Kaya, Wanju, hello, welcome to another episode of The Curb. I'm Andrew Pierce, and this is the podcast where I bring you in-depth interviews with filmmakers, creatives, and curators of culture. This podcast is recorded in Boorloo, Western Australia, sovereignty never ceded. In 2024, director Natalie Bailey and writer Lou Sands unleashed Audrey onto audiences in Australia and America. Here is a film that I called a caustic comedy that rains like a refreshing acid rain. It's a story of mum, Ronnie, played by Jackie Van Beek, who opts to literally take over the life of her daughter, Josephine Blasier, when she ends up in a coma after an accident. Hilarity ensues. This immaculately layered comedy film arrived in a time when Australian audiences are calling for more Aussie comedies on screen. Yet, they're either simply not paying attention to their existence, or they do go and see them and push them off, saying that they should be more like The Castle. As a writer and critic who predominantly covers Australian films, the notion of funneling a creative voice into one style of genre storytelling is a frustrating and reductive one, and in turn means that audiences are denying themselves a chance of engaging with some of the most inventive, exciting, and entertaining feature films that we've had in recent years. That notion of reframing and recontextualizing Audrey soon after its release is part of the scope of the upcoming screening of Audrey at the Melbourne Women in Film Festival, where the film has received the Reframe stamp for gender balanced production. This is an international mark of distinction that recognises film and television projects that have undertaken gender balance hiring practices inclusive of women, non-binary and trans people across key production roles. Gender balance is something that's often discussed in relation to Screen Australia's Gender Matters initiative, but is rarely executed in the production phase. And that's something that I talk about with writer Lou Sands in the following interview. We also unpack the reactions to Audrey, as well as talking about how the script was built and including the creation of the characters, including also the queer positivity on screen. Also, we really delve in deep into what the meaning of finding empathy within dark comedy actually is. It's something that we unpack a little bit, and Lou goes into that in detail in a way which I'm really grateful for, because it's a conversation that enlightens not only me, but hopefully you, about not just Audrey, but how we actually engage with dark comedy right now in an era where Nazis are on the streets, trans people are being vilified, a whole bunch of really terrible things taking place, yet, and I should really, really stress as well, Audrey is not about that, but on the same hand, you know, engaging with dark comedies allows us to process those kinds of dark things as well, and I think that this particular conversation really helps us engage with the notion of what it means to actually empathize with characters within a dark comedy, but also to understand the role of comedy nowadays. With that in mind, Lou also talks about her work on the seminal early 2000s comedy series Life Support, which saw actors like Abbie Cornish and Brendan Cowell satirize lifestyle programming with some of the finest dark comedy we've been privileged to see on a TV screen in Australia. I love that show, and you'll be able to hear a little bit more about that later on, and I'll even play a little bit of a clip of it. But I really want to stress that Audrey is going to be screening at the Melbourne Women in Film Festival on Friday, 21st of March, 2025 in NAM, Melbourne, of course. There will also be a discussion around the Reframe stamp as well and what it means. So please, if you're available and can head along, go and watch it, see it with an audience. It's the kind of film that, you know, you'll hear me talk about my experience of watching it. I hadn't had the chance to see it with an audience. I've seen it all at home. And I can imagine that getting to see it with an audience that is laughing in the darkest, bleakest moment would be such a thrill. Tickets for that are available via mwff.org.au. Right, if you also want to find out more about what we do on The Curb, then please head over to thecurb.com.au. We are a completely independent and ad-free website that lives on support of listeners and readers just like yourself. And for also people who are Patreon supporters, if you want an exclusive, unedited version of this interview, then visit patreon.com/thecurbau and you can support it from as little as $1 a month. This will be available for people from that $1 level upwards, the unedited version of this particular discussion. Right, Here is the trailer for Audrey, followed by my chat with Loose Ends.
You look amazing.
Yeah, thanks.
I used to be on TV.
Anything we know you from?
No.
Welcome to life.
It's my life. Another day goes by where you don't violate my human rights.
Off you go.
I am in a wheelchair, remember?
I don't want to go to drama school. I don't want to be an actor. I quit.
Audrey, we have invested so much time in your career. I gave up my career.
I'm taking a stand.
Jump already.
It's my life and you can't control it anymore.
She's in a coma.
Does it look like she might be able to perform a soliloquy, put down a self-tape if a casting director requires one?
Ronnie, she's not doing the course.
Her success is my responsibility.
How old did you say you were again?
At 17 and 9 months.
A lot of exposure to the sun.
Classes start Monday.
Mother's a bad bitch. She's got it going on.
Knowing what drives your character, that's craft.
EAD, bitch, mom's got it in the zone.
And you are?
Audrey.
Audrey.
Audrey Lipsick.
If we'll shift over to talking about Audrey in a moment, but it's the funny thing about watching that film, because I watched it in probably the least beneficial circumstances. I was at the Adelaide Film Festival. I got an email to say, would you be able to interview Natalie? She's available to have a chat. Mm-hmm. And I was like, yeah, cool, not a problem. She's like, no, the publicist was like, she's available tomorrow morning. Can you watch the film? I'm like, before then, I'm like, sure, okay, no worries. So there I was crouched over my early morning in the hotel room. My partner was still asleep and I was doing my very best to not cackle and laugh and wake her up. And so, yeah, it was a strange experience, but nonetheless, like...
It seems like the perfect way to watch Audrey. You know what I mean?
So.
A lot in a dark room, trying not to wake somebody else, just like on their computer. See, that seems to be like because it's the guilty, you know, like I know that some people have been like, I didn't laugh because I didn't want to upset other people by laughing. And I was like, okay, well, maybe we should just watch it on your own then, you know, and then you giggle all you want. Yeah. You know, you're not a bad person because you laughed, by the way.
Oh, exactly, right? And, I mean, I've watched it a couple of times since then and have found myself cackling every single time. And it's strange, right? So this is like really, really, like, one of my favourite films is Young Adult.
Oh, right? Yeah.
Okay, so to the point where I still have the Young Adult postcard, right? That's sad. But nonetheless, that and World's Greatest Dad, I think it is as well.
Yeah, that's which is. Good.
Yeah, right. And there's a level of darkness there, which you just kind of like with Young Adult, I'm like, oh, I kind of wish that I was Mavis, you know, because she's just doesn't give a shit at all. And then I watch Audrey and I'm just a little bit like, oh, I kind of wish I was Ronnie, you know, like she's just like the mum and the dad are just these two people who are just so oblivious in some regards. And that says more about me than I probably should say. But there is this joyful aspect of just being oblivious to your state in the world. And that's what I love about these films.
Yeah. I love, like, I remember seeing Welcome to the Doll's House.
Oh, yeah.
You know, at the movies. So again, aging myself real bad. I went to the premiere of E.T., so that really puts it in perspective. And I just was like, oh, my God. Like, you know, in a weird way, I think I felt very much like the titular character in it, you know, especially when she's made to sit downstairs and not leave the dinner table until she apologizes to her shitty sister. You know, those kind of moments are just so, like, you see yourself and yet you, like, there's something about dark comedy that does that. Like, that's such a kind of great thing where you're just like, oh, I can see this version of myself. And I'm not the odd one out anymore. You know, the how I view the world is seen by other people as well. So, you know, like, yeah, I don't know. That tends, when people say to me, especially with some of the characters in Audrey, when they're like, oh, you know, those people just don't exist. Like, they're just so awful. And I was like, have you seen social media? Like, there's a documentary about a mum who, like, tried to, like, you know, be an Uber mum on YouTube and practically nearly killed her children. Like, you know, they're everywhere. And maybe if you're not seeing them, maybe you are that person on, you know, the old adage.
Yeah.
Kind of like, can't figure out who the asshole in the room is.
Yeah.
Like, I'm so astonished. I'm like, I just write what I see.
Yeah. I mean, and that's the thing, right, is maybe why I really appreciate a film like Audrey is it reaffirms the empathy that we have, right? And you go, while I feel envious of the ability to be a mum like that, who is just like, oh, cool, my daughter's gone into a coma, I'm going to be her, right? Like, that's so absurd. But you can then also distance yourself and go, I'm glad I'm not that person because I am able to care about that situation.
Yeah, you know, you're allowed to. I remember when I was watching one of the cuts of it, and I get really teary at the scene at the theater, where what happens to Audrey at the theater, not to give it away, and I get really teary. And so I was like, oh, you know, you wrote this, how do you get teary? And I was like, this poor girl has been born into the worst family to support her right now, you know, like, she's a teenager who just really needs a bit of support, you know, and instead this has happened to her. Like, how can you not feel in this moment? You know, I might have created it, but I can definitely feel it. And I think, like, that's something that people tend to not. So that was funny. Like, when we were shooting, I had a lot of people come up to me and be like, you're so nice and lovely. What's in your head? Like, how do you, you're so empathetic. Like, I'm the sort of person that someone beeps me in a car and that, and like my husband will be like, oh, fuck off. And I'll be like, you don't know what sort of day they had today. Like, I've got that much kind of like empathy that I think having that allows you to write a Ronnie and allows you to write Cormac. I think if you don't have it, and I think you've got like this distance and you're judging, it doesn't work for anyone, you know. And that, so like, but I grew up like watching, I wasn't allowed to watch, I didn't watch children's television because I couldn't stand it. And that's, except for like Press Gang came along and kind of like, I was like, oh yeah. But I have an 8-year-old and watching children's shows with him and films is excruciating to me. So I grew up watching like Magnum PI, Harlequin Romances, Remington Steele, all of that, and Spanish films and stuff like that, you know, that were bootlegged, by the way. And so I grew up with this kind of like very different aesthetic that, you know, humor could happen in the worst moment and all that kind of stuff. And to me, it's funny when my dad watches it, he thinks it's really Australian. And when my mum watches it, she's like, oh, it's really Spanish.
Wow. Okay. Yeah. I mean, so it is heightened, right? There is, and there is that kind of, there's a sense of melodrama. Right? That is a distinctly Australian skewed version of melodrama. And I love that. Love that so much. But I kind of want to talk about the notion of reinterpreting Audrey. Yeah. And I'm so grateful that it's kind of been given the chance to, you know, shortly after it's been released, but to have the reframing of it.
In retrospect now.
Yeah. Like, well, because what really kind of, if I can be really blunt, like I'm really shitted off by the state of people going, oh, we need more comedies in Australia. And it's like, okay, but are you actually paying attention to the fact that we do actually have comedies taking place here? You know, How to Please a Woman, for example, like Audrey, for example. These are all films. Yeah. And then, you know, people go and see them and they don't understand what's actually going on screen. They want, I don't know what they want, to be honest.
I don't know what they want, to be honest. I don't, like, it's such an interesting thing because they'll be like, oh, Australian comedy. And I'm like, we have some of the funniest exports in the world. Like, you know, it's kind of crazy that you think that we don't have the capacity to do this stuff here. And when we do it, like, Audrey's definitely vanguarding the shit out of itself. Like, you know, it is a little bit kind of less mainstream, obviously. And that, but you know, I really enjoyed How to Please a Woman. You know, I think Renee's a great director, you know, like, it's, I think there's so many good things that are happening. And then, yeah, for us to be, I don't know what they want. They just sit there and kind of go like, it's not what I wanted. And you're kind of like, well, we should have a broad church.
Yeah. Yeah.
Like, we should have a much broader church. Like, the American, like, it's funny when I talk to people overseas, they love it, you know, and that, and they're like, oh, this is so good. Are you making more stuff? Like, what's coming out of Australia? And it's such a weird thing when you're like, it's so hard to explain to people that back home they're writing articles about like, these people obviously don't know the rules of comedy, you know? And I'm like, Natalie's mentor was like Amanda Iannucci. Like, you know what I mean? Like, kind of like, I feel like, you know, but I don't know. I don't know what they want, but I feel, what is it, you know, Noel Gallagher used to say, you know, audiences, customers don't know what they want until you give it to them.
Yeah.
So You know, and that used to be the great thing about cinema, and it still is, that you go and see something randomly and it's exactly what you wanted to see or needed to see at the time. It went with no expectation. Remember that? Like, you just like walk in and you'd see a film, just go.
That's how I grew up. And, you know, I used to wag school, like right when I started high school in 96, they built a cinema right near school. And so I would just be like, we had a lawnmower person at the time, and I would get him to call up and say, please say that I'm not able to go in. And I would just go up to the cinema and watch a whole bunch of stuff that didn't matter what was on. You just go in there and you see it, right? And you have your mind changed and stuff.
Yeah, you just didn't matter. You were just like, well, I had two cinemas in my suburb, and there were two Dendys, and one played the more mainstream one. So you could, like, I remember like 1 year, like, you know, I saw Reality Bites and Four Weddings and a Funeral and like everything. And then I went and saw, my mum used to call them Lou movies. They were always like the American indies, you know, from your Hell Hartleys to whatever it was. And I would just go, and I was very popular at high school, obviously. So, you know, I'd just go on my own, you know, just to get away from the maddening crowds. And, you know, and I would just watch everything. I had no expectation, and I didn't get annoyed at the filmmakers if it didn't meet my expectation. It just wasn't for me. I'd go see something else.
But now it's changed so much. People expect, you know, I think, certainly talking to some people, they just want The Castle 2, right?
Yes, they want
The Castle, yes. And fine, whatever. You know, The Castle's good fun, but we can't always have The Castle. But then they also want to know exactly what they're getting before they even step into it. And now we're obviously a lot more social and stuff. Everybody's got Instagram, Facebook, etc. So you're more accessible. And so people then come to you and go, what the fuck did you make? Why did you do this? Right. And it's absurd. It really is absurd because, again,
heaps of fun. Social media is so much fun. I mean, it's just, I mean, if you really want to like feel good about yourself, that's the neighborhood you want to hang out in. I don't read anything,
good,
by the way.
Good, good.
It gets vetted by people that are kind of like, you know, but I come from stand-up as well, but also just before that, like, bit where they started, the social media really started up, you know, and I didn't like people looking at me, so that was the reason that I kind of left, you know, because that's one of the biggest things that you need to have as a comedian, is people to look at you. And then I liked being a bit kind of more backstage, like in their shadows of stuff, I think, which is funny because now I'm doing interviews and press, so obviously, you know, can't quite escape it. But yeah, I think so now, I think it's like people have this expectation, but it does make sense. So in a world where there's algorithms and stuff like that, and people, you know, are getting served up the stuff that they want to see, you know, based merely on their, tech companies reading all their data and everything, it makes sense that they're like, hang on, I've been presented with something that I didn't know. It's a real brush for them. And I've often said, like, in regards to when I talk about Audrey, is that I think people sometimes, not all the time, but some people get being uncomfortable, confused with being offended. And it's really as simple as that. And we used to sit, it comes down to empathy and all those sort of things. We should be able to sit in those spaces, those uncomfortable spaces, in a world that's becoming so polarized and so divided, and we're being thrown against each other all the time, which is what the bigger higher ups, what the billionaires, all those guys want. That they want us all fighting amongst ourselves. And I think film and art and stuff like that can bring people together, but you know, people have gone to great lengths to tell me otherwise. You know, I mean,
yeah, well, it's just terrible. Like, and I'm glad that you don't read it, because it's just like, it's absurd. But I kind of want to touch on the puritanical nature of characters. People expect all of the characters that they watch to be the best person ever. Yet they'll go and be like, Breaking Bad and Sopranos are brilliant and stuff like that.
Oh, my God. As long as they're men. Like, I'm going to be like real blatant here. As long as they're men, right? As long as they're absolutely guys, doesn't matter. You could set a house on fire with a child in it and they'd be like, wow, yeah, that seems right. You know, you switch that gender out and I'm going to have to build out a whole trauma story for the female, that's why she did what she did and all that kind of stuff like that. Otherwise, you know, like Nightcrawler is a really good example. One of my favorite films, you know, but he is not like a redeeming character, nor does he have a redemptive arc. you know, now if I was to put a woman in that role, it would completely, and I've had to do gender swaps for films and stuff like that. You know, I often get brought along because they're like, you know, we want your voice. And so I pitch my idea and stuff. And often it's like, once you switch the character into a female or, you know, it becomes, you have to justify everything. Absolutely everything has to be justified. Like, and it becomes exhausting. Like, you know, he's just a loser who, you know, likes to drink and fuck about, and that he's a lad. She's obviously going through some emotional turmoil that she's suppressing and all the rest of it. Whereas sometimes I'm just like, what if she just is? Like, oof. And I stay the course with that because that gives me another, like, for me, that gives me a much more interesting character exploration. You know, what if Ronnie, see, for me, like, when Ronnie's like, when, you know, what happens to Audrey and everything you were saying before, she's just like, well, what would a hero do?
Yeah.
You know, like, what would a hero do? You know, it's because she's still like spinning it in this kind of like way of like, I'm a good mum. I'm still a good mum. Moment of self-doubt. Okay, I've really got to prove I'm a good mum. You know, and she does something that goes beyond the norms of a female character. So I think for me, an unlikable woman, and I use that to, you know, that's the industry speak for what I do. Is a woman who wants something outside of what society permits her to want. And it is really as simple as that. And that confuses us. And we get a little bit, oof, you know, and we get offended and we get all this kind of stuff. But yeah, I think the Puritan, and I think it's getting worse. Like, it's weird. Like, it's really like people just being like, I just don't understand them. Like, I can't get into that. I'm not them. And I'm like, great. You're not them. You know, even when we were making the film and that, and Hannah would say to me sometimes, oh my God, my mum would never say that. Now I've met her mum. Her mum's a rock star. And that, but I was like, good. It's not, she's not your mum. It's Ronnie. She's Nora's mum. You know, like, thank God your mum doesn't say that to you. Like, yeah. So I think it is as simple as that. And I think you can just see it on the world stage at the moment, how easy that women are being kind of again forced, I think, into being a particular sort of way, that is because we've made a lot of people uncomfortable, a lot of very powerful people uncomfortable, by just merely existing. And so if that's already your barrier, merely existing, you know, it's an uphill battle, but it's a battle that I'm constantly willing. I've been kicked in the ankles a lot, you know, like every time somebody's like, yeah, we need to like, for me, it's more of a challenge to craft them so that people go with them. That's the skill, right? That you can go with your villain, or you can, you know, empathize with them or be complicit, you know, in their actions at some point. So, yeah, but I'd love to say it's not the case, but yeah. I feel like I'd love to be like, we don't need reframe anymore and no, you know, all these great things. We still need all of this stuff. We still need it because we still need visibility. Mm. Probably more now than ever before that we really need to be like pushing on that.
Oh, definitely.
We need to show sorts of people doing different sorts of things, whether or not we agree with it or not, and really critically look at it, you know, like, and not take it personally as much.
Well, that's the thing. Like, every year I've been tracking the amount of women directed films or women written films, or, you know, even the films that have got a predominantly women driven production team and things like that, because the focus is usually solely on writers, directors, producers, and then less of a focus on behind the scenes kind of stuff.
Yeah.
And like 2024 was a little bit better than 2023, but compared to the amount of male-directed films out there, Australia did a really shit job. And I know that we've got the Gender Matters Initiative and things like that. And I know the background of yourself and Natalie getting together with the speed dating thing, which is really helpful. But on the same hand, like, were there any, I assume that speed dating event was just for women, right?
No, it was a mixed bag.
All right, cool.
It was a mixed bag. This was before all the changes happened, yeah. You know, like, all women, like before that stuff as much. No, it was like, it was a real mixed bag of people. It was just, it was both of our last meeting. And I was like, just like, oh man, I just want to go. Like, this is so depressing. And then Natalie was like, oh, I love your stuff. I watched The Problematic World of Lou. I've written, I was like, whoa, like, you like did your homework. Like, you know, I knew who she was. And so it was like this, we could just start talking about stories straight away, which is so refreshing. Like, we just straight away, we knew each other's like sensibilities and just could have that conversation. But yeah, but like, I also think like looking at like awards and things like that and nominations and that, it's still incredibly male dominated in Australia. You know, it just is. Like, you know, there's entire categories that don't even have a woman in them, you know, outside of best actress. Like, you know, and it's, that's hard when you see that sort of stuff and you're just kind of like, I think we did, like, we made a film. It was in South by Southwest. It competed there. It was in the grand jury selection. You know, it's gotten really good reviews. It's like really robust and stuff like that. But also I do think it's a comedy thing as well. You know, there is still a bit of a cringe about, do we, we've got a drama, we've got a comedy, what's more worthy of us elevating right now? And I think we tend to go back to drama every single time. And that's not to say that drama film isn't great or brilliant or wonderful or anything like that. But I do wonder what our landscape would look like if we elevated more comedies.
Oh, definitely. I mean, it's genre brethren in a way, the way that Australia treated horror for so long, right? And it's nuts. And then to have Talk to Me and Late Night with the Devil do really, really well. And there's a whole bunch of other films like Sissy and a bunch of other films as well that have really kind of bumped that up. And now we're going, oh, actually, we can do that. And the absurd thing is that, you know, we make great comedies. They are really good, but we don't elevate it because, as you're saying, like, there's almost this genre bias, which is really offensive because that's where a lot of the great stuff is getting pushed forward. And a lot of, if we look at a lot of the great comedies as well that have been made in Australia, I always hesitate when I say like Muriel's Wedding is a comedy. I don't think it's a comedy. It's so dark.
Everyone forgets. Committing check fraud when you meet her. Like, everyone, but I thought it was a musical. And I'm like, yeah, that's like, no, that's the stage.
Yeah.
It's real messy.
Oh yeah, but it almost feels like on the same kind of trajectory as Audrey in a way. But what I'm getting at is like films like Priscilla, Muriel's Wedding, The Castle. They've changed our vernacular, right? They change how we talk and see Australia, and it's often driven from a comedic perspective, whereas dramas don't tend to do that. We all know that the outback place is a dusty place where murder happens. That's about it, right? You know, I'm being very reductive, but it's just...
No, I know, but I know what you're saying. It's hard. Like, when you're trying to, like, write a comedy, especially, people will be like, why now? Like, why is this and you're kind of like, well, I want to entertain people and I want to do stuff like that, you know. But also like the stuff that I want to write, especially like when you're kind of like, oh, I'm like at the moment, I just finished a script, which is a dramedy about pregnancy loss. You know, I want to represent different stories and things that we don't see on screen. I think Australia is much more diverse in storytelling than I think we give ourselves credit for. And I think we could be better. Absolutely. But I think it does come down to like what we pick and choose to back. You know, and sometimes it's just like, I do feel like being a comedy writer and coming out of that space, especially, like I always say I write drama and people just really misinterpret it. You know, like I'm still that Dawson's Creek kid going, you don't understand. But like, I don't come at it as if I'm writing a comedy. I come at it like I'm writing a story, but I'm definitely influenced. I think Australian comedy is great. I think we do have a beautiful specificity, but I think I'd love to do like what New Zealand does, where they really amplify it and they amplify that diverse range of different comedy voices as well. Like, not every voice has to be the same. I think that's the thing as well, is like, if my comedy is really different to like Colin from Accounts, you know, it's very different to Deadlock, you know, it's different. It doesn't mean that we cancel each other out. It should be that there's space for that whole group of us making a very kind of clear, singular voiced comedy. you know. But so it doesn't feel like that a lot of the time. It kind of feels like, you know, you have to kind of squish in and
you've got to hit the four quadrants and do all these, tick all these certain boxes and stuff. But
yeah,
but you're mentioning like the diversity of styles of comedy, and you're kind of doing that already within Audrey with the different characters as well. Like how we see Ronnie and the jokes that are associated with her versus the jokes that are associated with Audrey or Cormac, for example. Like it's a roller coaster of comedic stuff. When you're writing characters like that, do you slip into their mindset of going, all right, this is a different brand or style of comedy for this character?
Yeah, absolutely. So I write, so I draft a lot in my head for a very, very long time. And I write for a very short period of time. That's generally what happens. And then my drafting process is it tends to be character focused. So my first draft will always generally be the like lead or the person that I'm centering it around. And then I know the second one, I'm going to have to go and like look at Cormac or look at Audrey or look at Nora or whoever it is and really kind of like have a look. And it's really about making sure that their voice is different to the other people's voice as well. Like, so that's a huge thing, you know, so you've got to make sure, you know, so Nora speaks in kind of slightly more short, aggressive sentences. You know, like I'm so cognizant of that. And then also like when I, you know, in this instance, I also knew the actors, met them, knew all of that. And so I was able to even go back and refine it further, you know, and stuff like that. But like, I'm not like, they're called my big scenes when I've got like four or five people talking over each other, you know, but I'm like, that's how people talk, you know, like they don't stop and put the grocery thing down and then have a conversation. Families talk over each other all the time. They're having different conversations in different rooms but hearing everything in one room and stuff like that. So in order for those scenes to work, those voices have to be very distinctive, and they are all just like all very, so you know, Ronnie very much, I knew her voice really well. Audrey, I really knew her. Nora is probably as close to me as I can kind of get, like in terms of, you know, if I was to kind of anchor myself or who I kind of related to the most. And then Cormac, you know, again, you're having a male in this kind of robust female ensemble and everything like that, but I wanted him to have a really clear journey. I wanted him to have his own agency and all this kind of stuff. So I did another draft really just focused on him and that, so that he's also up at the level that the other characters are as well. That's also what you want to be doing, is make sure they're all meeting each other, you know, as kind of consistently as possible. So it's a lot of like work that goes into it, really detail orientated, and like for the scripts, like I remember it was somewhere and someone was asking Natalie and I about like how much improvisation was there, and I think we can say maybe three lines. Everything was scripted, and one of the lines that was improvised was one of like the younger guys, and Tiani, he plays Andy, one of the friends in the film, and he came up with a line that was, you've got wheels, roll them. And the other young actors were there and they were like, well, just ask if you can do it. And I just remember like my rule, and Natalie and I both had a rule, if it was funnier and better, like why not? And also it takes nothing away from us at all. And it gives them so much more. Like, you know, and he got to stand up at the British Film Festival, you know, the BFIs, when it was screening then, he was there and he got to stand up and Natalie brought him on stage and he was able to say, yeah, I did this line. Like, I think that sort of stuff is like really cool. But yeah, it was scripted to within an inch of its life. But even when I did The Problematic World of Lou, which was like a web series that also was part of the Melbourne Women's Film Festival a couple of years ago, much to my surprise, they found it on the internet and they were like, I'm gonna put this on. And there were a lot of comedians in it. And sometimes I'd hear them go like, oh yeah, no, I made that line up or something. And I'd be like, you didn't make, that was completely written. But I know your voice so well that I was able to write it. So yeah, so I'm really, dialogue is a big thing for me. Like huge, I would argue, just massive. It's like my main focus. You know, aside from everything else.
Of course.
Like that's a huge.
But it is a foundational thing. And like, I love the, as you're talking about, the way that the house plays into it too, right? Because when we live in a home with a family, parents and siblings and stuff, we don't interact with each other in the same room. We're doing it yelling at each other from different rooms, right? And that was such a distinctly Australian thing. Like, I'm sure that other cultures do it too, but it is.
It's like a very, yeah, it's exactly what it is. No, but it's also, I think, you know, when you talk about the castle, right, we're all leveraging from the same knowledge that we have, you know, right down to the pool room and them having dinner together, and that these are like really familiar things. So what you want to be doing is, and that's real. And I think that's why people connect to those things as well. And so for me, it was important that we saw them as like a normal family, that we're about to do something abnormal.
Yeah. Well, I mean, that's it. Like, I would hope my mum wouldn't be like this, but you never know. Like, when people are pushed to a certain point.
Yeah, you know, I think that's it as well. Like, we just don't know how we're going to respond in a situation until we're in it, I think. Like, that's something I still learn. Like, we can wax lyrical about how we want to be and what we believe in and all the rest of it and that. But when you come up to the line, you know, you still got to make a choice to be like, act on it or not act on it or do this. So I'm always like really interested in what happens when I bring that character to the line and go, what would they do? But people are like, oh, they just made weird choices that weren't like what I would normally. And Jackie talks to that, where she'd be like, oh, I know what's happening. No, I don't know what's happening. No, I know what's happening. I don't know what's happening. And I was like, but to me, they were perfectly rational decisions.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
That made complete sense. You know, like, just complete sense. So it's hard to explain that to people. And I'm just like, no, they, I mean, that's just, that just seems normal.
Definitely.
But completely not.
You know, there's nothing quite like the feeling of satisfaction you get when you finish a do-it-yourself job. But sometimes doing a job like digging out this backyard to put in a swimming pool is just too hard. And we all know that hiring an excavator is just too expensive. But don't panic. Take a tip from Todd. Just bury some human remains in amongst your shifted earth and then report the find to the police. They'll be here with their own excavation crew in no time. Now, I've found that any remains will work in most areas, though you may struggle with Indigenous remains in the Northern Territory. But since we're here in South Australia, I've decided to use three child skulls. Yeah, police, please. Oh, g'day, mate. Look, I was just digging around in my backyard and, well, I've dug up some bones and, well, they look human. I think you'd agree that's a pretty satisfying job. A deep end worthy of a diving board and room for a spa down the end.
I just want to touch on one other thing too, which is going into life support and talking about that, right? And because you're talking about, right, completely rational things, and I know that you weren't the only person writing on there, and there was a whole bunch of other voices and stuff.
No, I love that you watched it. Like, I'm running into more people lately.
Somewhere but, in there, the DVD sets are that I picked up from Cash Converters. So
are you like me? I've got some DVD collection because I want this. This is mine.
but the thing is, right, and I showed my partner this after we rewatched Audrey, and she's like, what the fuck is this? And I'm like, no, you don't understand. Like, this was such a big part of my life and so many other people's lives, because the scenarios that were put out there are rational approaches to really, really out there scenarios, right? And I'm curious if you can talk about that kind of approach to really, really intense stuff.
Because everyone's like, we weren't doing that. And I was like, yeah, 20 years ago, we were like really pushing the envelope with this. Like, we were doing satire. It did push the, I used to remember Let the Blood Run Free. I loved that show, you know. So to get even to work on that show, somebody overheard me talking in a cafe at film school. That was it. I was thinking I was talking about a donut or something, like, really. And they were like, hey, we've got this show that we're just doing. And it was very guerrilla. Like, I can't stress that enough to you. And I was like, cool. And I hadn't really written sketch or anything before. But Abbie Cornish was on the show, and we were kind of the same age, and I think the guys involved were a lot older, and they liked the idea of having like a young fishnet stocking wearing, you know, thing come in and kind of do that. But I actually wrote a lot for like Dr. Rudy and The Modern Woman, more than I wrote for like the younger one. I think it was also like, because it was a lifestyle show, so we were taking the piss out of this as well. It was a very fine line. I think it got a little bit softer as the series progressed and they got rid of us, like kind of the more hardline ones. But like one was like, I was just somewhere once and I was at a museum and I saw a woman looking at Indigenous art. And she was like really like beautiful. She was like fawning over it. And then she said to her friend, I mean, what I love about it is that you can just do it yourself. And I was like, oh, that's brilliant. Like that's a sketch. And so there you go. I've got Modern Woman who's talking about this beautiful artwork and everything. And then she's like, don't you think you can just do it yourself? And then she does a tutorial on it.
Yeah.
You know, like. She's the bad, like, we're not punching down. We're saying, like, people are saying this stuff, you know, like, this is normal. I think that's the thing is, like, it's actually a lot closer to how people were thinking and acting. And so the way that satire works is, like, to bring it right up to that line and then to be like, that's not normal. And you go, yeah, that happens all the time. Because the amount of people that go, oh, my God, yeah, my mum says that or my nan, you know, like, yeah. And you're like, yeah, they do, don't they? So that was kind of where we came out. And then there was, like, the Dr. Rudy breast cancer sketch. You know, because what about the men? You know, like that sort of stuff would sit today still. I think it would probably get torn apart just because I think that we are in a slightly more reactionary space. But what we're trying to do there was actually say, like, look at the hypocrisy. Like, look at it. Like, it's there. It functions every single day. And that's what I love about satire is that, you know, and it's, sometimes I'm a bit like we live too close to it in our day-to-day life when you're kind of like, is that a car display on the White House lawn? Like, you know, like that you wouldn't even get that in an episode of Veep, right? So as satire writers, it's a little bit hard right now because we're just like, oh, my God, it's just like it could just be real, you know. Satire was always meant to be, it could be real, but was it real, you know. But yeah, that's really what Life Support was just about like taking stuff that we saw like other people do or like, you know, I always used to get people saying to me, what's this? What's happening here? What's going on here? You know, about my face and that not, you know, no one's going to see this so no one really understands, but if you know who I am, you might understand it. And I would just be like, oh, what do you mean? Oh, well, where's it? It's very exotic. You know, or like when once I was sent to an audition I walked in and they were like, you'll be reading for the Chinese lady. And I said, no, I'm not going to do that. And then they were like, if you feel any better, you don't have to use the accent. And I was like, no, like none of this is like, that's a really absurd moment, right? Like, and people go, that's not real. And I'm like, it is real. Like it is real. These moments happen. And so for me, like Life Support was just a series of moments that we just pushed, you know, a bit further, but they always come from a point of truth.
Well, I mean, part of the thing that sticks with me, like there's a specific sketch, I think it's like in the first or second episode, and Abbie Cornish is like, if you want to get free travel, then I'll show you how to do it. And then she goes up and does the whole like, oh, I'm from Iran or whatever it is and puts on, you know, has a garb and all this kind of stuff and then gets deported. And that, like, years and years later, like, my dad's a migrant from England and I had a huge argument with him about migrants and stuff and saying, you know, yada, yada, you don't need to go into all that. But basically his response was, well, surely if I went up and said that I was a migrant, they'd be, you know, deporting me too. And I'm like, no, that's not how it works.
No, but it's not how it works, yeah. Right? There's a whole bunch of like biases and prejudices, and that's why the sketch works, right? Because full of biases and prejudices and all of those things. And the only way that that scene works is because those things exist. If they didn't exist, then we'd all be like very confused. Like, what do you mean? You just have to like do this. And there are people around, and I meet them constantly, who have like no clue. And they're just like, really? Is that still a problem? And you're like, yeah, it's still a problem. Yeah. Yeah. But I can see why you might not think it's a problem. You know, good on you. But I think it's the same thing. It's like, if it wasn't a problem, we wouldn't be able to find comedy in it, you know, especially because comedy is meant to, like, I think it's good to hold a mirror up a bit and just be like, this is how it is. You know, I for all the stuff I write comes from a point of truth, whether that's just a fleeting moment or a little bit of something, but it has to be, like, it just comes from truth because I'm spoiled for choice, really. The world is full of it at the moment. You know, everyone's now got their own shop front as well. So I'm able to, like, peruse the shop fronts of everybody's opinion and everyone's exercise routine and everything. Like, there's a scene that was cut from Audrey, and just because it tonally didn't work where it was placed in order. But there's a bit in Audrey where she does a dance to talk about how her mum has, like, you know, betrayed her. And actually at the start, when Audrey's in a coma, there's a scene where Ronnie does a trauma dance at the hospital, which is brilliant. And that was inspired by, there's a show on at the moment called, like, The Secret Life of Mormon Housewives or something. Yeah. Like that. And I was just I don't spend as much time on social media as, like, my other people do, so they'll send me stuff, you know. And it was a video of a pregnant woman at an ICU or a NICU ward somewhere doing an interpretive dance about the fact that her kid was in intensive care, and she was doing, like, a whole dance with it. And it turned out that TikTok had all these trauma dances, which was people being, like, you know, singing and dancing, but being like, my mum walked out on us when we were 10, and, like, but all doing it to, like, music and dance. And I was like, this is amazing. But that one with her and the baby, they're in the crib. Now, she's got her own television show now, by the way. So that just shows you, like, when I'm told, oh, these people don't exist and they're not going to be rewarded. I mean, they've got their own TV show. But I remember seeing that and I was like, oh, yeah, okay. So Ronnie's going to do a trauma dance, which is about sort of falling into a coma. So it was like a call and response. Again, so when people kind of say to me, these people don't exist, I'm like, literally, they are there. If you see them, if you're not seeing them, then you're functioning in a different space than I live in. But and maybe it was like, I was picked on a lot growing up because I had darker skin than other people. I was more ethnically ambiguous than other people. I lived in a predominantly, like, very Anglo part of the neighborhood, and people didn't care not to make comments to you and stuff like that. So I was always a bit on the outside, you know, and I think being on the outside, you observe things a little bit more. And I think that kind of put me in the path of comedy, because comedy is a great coping mechanism to it, you know, it really is. And then at the same time, it's like, you know, you get a perspective, you're looking at other people, because there's all these other people around you with you who are also on the outside as well for many different reasons. And I'm always interested in them. I'm always kind of like watching them and stuff, kind of wrestle the main characters of the world, and they're everywhere, you know? So, yeah. And I don't know, that's just.
Well, it's wonderful, right? But it's, you know, as you mentioned, like, it's about the biases. And I don't think in Australia, at least, the greater population at large, right, is really comfortable with addressing our own biases or being able to even look at it. Like, one of the things I always say is, does this person own a mirror in their house, right? Now, everybody's got a mirror, but do they actually use and look at themselves and reflect on what they're doing? And if they don't, then they don't have a mirror in their house, right? They walk around as if the world is for them. And I think that maybe that's why it's part of, you know, a film like Audrey is really uncomfortable for a lot of people, because they don't see this world. And there are so many of us who were bullied and grew up and being able to force to see the world from a different perspective. I was bullied as a kid, and maybe that's why I'm the way I am. But it's just like, how hard is it to look at the world and have a little bit of empathy for the other person walking in the street? And for Australians, it appears to be really, really, really hard.
The moment it seems to be really hard, and it concerns me, you know, like, it's a concerning thing. And I think that's why I continue to want to, like, write stories that affect those people, or are told from a different perspective, something that we don't necessarily see on screen, that are going to make you uncomfortable and things like that. But they're going to make you uncomfortable because maybe you haven't seen it or you haven't engaged with it And that, like, I think that's the great thing about art and music and all those kind of things like that. It does force you to engage. Entertaining is, you know, yes, but it's like Trojan horsing. It forces you to engage with these ideas and concepts and things like that. And if we're being delivered our art, you know, and told this is what you'd like, here, keep having more of what you'd like, I wonder how much we can, how much we are engaging with what art is presenting us with, you know, like. And I think it makes it harder for us to have empathy for other people. I don't think you, like, believe, I don't believe that you should have empathy for a bunch of people, right? Like, I think, like, you know, it's like, I'm still confused. Like, when I'm like, I thought we all decided a long time ago that Nazis were bad and wrong, right? And we decided that they were on the wrong side of history and we wanted to be on the right side of history. And now in my lifetime, I'm like watching the news and I'm like, why is that? He's a Nazi. And you're interviewing him on the Today Show. Like, that was like a Jerry Springer thing, right? Like, that was like, if you were going to see him, they were on Jerry Springer or Doctor, or you know, Phil or Donahue or something like that. The idea that they're in the mainstream now and we're like, well, everyone's got to have their thing. We've got to understand them. And I'm like, I don't know if we need to understand them because we know where they're coming from, because we've seen where they've come from. We've seen what they've done, you know, like, so... I feel like they've had quite a bit of space to exist. They've really shown us who they are. It's very well documented. I don't think they're going to change their grand plan anytime soon. So it's like, you know, I'm like, I don't need empathy for you. It's okay. You can just be a villain in my world. But I think, like, when you see, I think, minorities or vulnerable people or things like that, and we don't have the tolerance anymore. And I think a lot of that is to do with people want to keep us fighting amongst ourselves. They want us, you know, we've got high inflation, we've got cost of living, we've got all these sort of things. And we're being told it's because that person has got what you have and that person's got what you've got. And so we're just like doing this at the time. And I'm like, but these, what is it? 1% of the world has 50% of everything. Should be storming their gates. We should be taking all this energy and storming their gates. Like, they've got everything. They're just hoarding shit, you know, but we're fighting amongst ourselves. And I feel like, for me, comedy, being in a room in a cinema and everyone's laughing together, like, that is such a beautiful moment where you're just kind of like, actually, we've got more in common than we have not in common. You know, we have, like, at least we've all got death in common. Like, let's just start there and work our way backwards, you know? Let's just find a mutual starting point. And that, and I think that's kind of where I want to see people kind of come to. So I love it. Like, I've been in cinemas where people have fallen out of their chairs, snorting, you know, and everything. That's a huge, like, you're just like, oh, that's great. That person feels good right now. And they've had like a moment of catharsis. And I think there's nothing wrong with kind of wanting to put joy, we're talking about a black comedy, but putting joy into the world. Putting a joyful moment into someone's life by either seeing themselves or just getting a joke or loving it or seeing a film that they really think is just like exactly what they needed to see. I mean, that's everything for me. Like, that's the thing. So, like, when people, you know, social media say things and all the rest of it, and I think it's hard, like, it's women, it's a female comedy, it's all of these things. We have a lot of shit that we have to deal with, and a lot of people write from that perspective, you know, they've got a natural bias against that sort of stuff and a prejudice and that, whereas I'm just like, well, we made a movie, did you make one? You know, kind of like, you know, and we took a risk, did you take one? You know, and we hoped it would connect with some people. And look, the letters that I get, and I've had people write essays about it and do this sort of stuff. And like, we were talking about the reframing and everything. Like, I love how people interpret it. I learn stuff from it. That's the cool thing that no one's asked you about. It's like, it's not yours anymore. Like, I'm never going to dogmatically sit there and go, it's about this, or you've got to have this is what you take away from it. That's none of my business anymore. Like, I know what my intent was, but I'm constantly blindsided when other people kind of will tell me what it meant to them. And, you know, and tell me stories about it. And Natalie gets the same thing. And yeah, and I have a lot of like young women writing to me, which is really interesting, you know, and like, you know, being positioned as like a feminist filmmaker kind of thing as well, which I always find like really interesting, because I'm just like, yeah, well, I always write from the perspective that I have. and I just happen to be a woman who, and I, you know, I do believe that you have to be a feminist in order to be one. I think they're one and the same, especially now. But yeah, I love that. I love that sort of stuff, that people, the negative stuff, it can get to you a bit, but at the same time, you're like, why is that negative bit more important than that person who really loved it and felt connected to it and has watched it 12 times? Like, I don't want to take away from their experience by giving that other person more validation, you know?
Exactly. Like, I guess as the last question then, I imagine that you maybe get some people who might say, like, I didn't realize you could do that with comedy. I didn't realize that that kind of stuff. Is that kind of the stuff that you're getting, or is there any specific one to stuff?
Yeah, definitely as well. I've had some people come up to me and be like, how did you even get that made? You know, and that, and I'm like, I think it hit certain people that were able to usher it along at the right time. You know, it just spoke to them. And I think also the people that championed it were like, really, like Sally Kaplan was a huge champion of it. And so it was just, for me, it was more like people had asked, because they go, oh, it's politically incorrect. I'm like, it's not politically incorrect, actually. It's like very politically correct. And we don't punch down. There's enough to punch sideways. There's enough to do that. I think you got to be smarter to kind of, you got to be tougher to kind of do comedy nowadays than I think before. But yeah, I think when people come up and they go, oh, you know, you kind of, how did you get that made and stuff like that? And I'm just like, look, to me, it's always about the story. You know, what's the story of Ronnie? What's the story of the Lipstick family? And that the vessel that I choose to do it, which is quite genre blending, by the way, like it's not just comedy. There's like a whole bunch of stuff going on there. And, you know, the third act just goes, yeah, we're just doing this now. It's like, that's really important to me, is like, I'm like, yeah, but you can do that. You can have the freedom to do all of that. It's cinema. It doesn't need to be prescriptive, you know, at all. You can take chances in that. So that's kind of like, but for me, I don't know. I kind of look at them and just go, well, it's what I write. It's what I've written for a very long time. And it just happened that the world shifted at the right time where people were like, oh, we're okay with making a female-led, you know, driven comedy. You know, again, like, you know, Muriel's was 25 years ago. So I think, you know, we were allowed another one. And then in 25 years, there'll be another one. Every 25 years, we come out and we dance around trees together. And we make a comedy. The Witch's Coven comes together. For me, I think, for me, most personally, it's when I have people write to me and go, you've inspired me to write again. Or I've got a script in my drawer, or I've always wanted to do something a bit different. And then I've been told no on so many times. And I can't tell you how many times I've been told no. I'm so used to know that if someone says yes to me, I spiral. Like that's my thing where I'm like, what? Oh no, now I'm going to vomit, right? But no, I'm like, yeah, cool. So that's kind of, that to me is like the biggest thing, is like kind of, because now I want other people to be able to make those movies. You know, I want to see more of them. I want to see more of those kind of stories and stuff, because for me, for 20 odd years, I didn't have the reference that I needed. Now I've got, like, it's weird to have to make the reference for your film, because like Mirrors was so long ago, and I'm not, you know, PJ Hogan, you know, I'm not that writer, you know, I'm a different beast entirely and stuff, but I hopefully that, you know, there's someone else that can kind of, that this work can amplify their work and allow them to have kind of a voice to do stuff, because I would love to see this ecosystem get bigger rather than contracting as much as it tends to do. We tend to do something and then we pull back again. I want to see that growth keep going. And that might be very optimistic and naive of me, but I mean, I don't think it should take that long to make a female driven comedy.
Yeah, well, exactly.
You know, because it's not even this female driven, it's just this great character. Ronnie is a great character, you know. And I think that, and I know mums that relate to her, and I know like Cormac, even like my husband is queer and stuff. And so having a character that was queer and it not being like a shameful thing, that really spoke to him.
I was, I mean, if speaking, you know, specifically about Cormac for a moment, seeing him on screen, following his journey, I was just like, I've been waiting for a character like that for so long. And just being able to see sex positivity, relationship openness, that kind of stuff, presented in a way that is like non-judgmental. And it's, as you're saying, you're not punching down on it. You're punching sideways at some things, but you're certainly that aspect, not at all. It's like, yeah, great, this exists. How brilliant is this?
No, yeah. I really held strong to that. That was an interesting one where I was just like, this relationship will not be seen in a negative, this is not a negative relationship. This is not that at all. I don't want to see that. Like, this is a positive, this is the love story. This is the tingle. This is like him being able to step into himself again. And then he makes everything better for everyone. Like, you know, he's, and like Jeremy himself would be like all crumpled up and, you know, to be like, that's Kurt from Heartbreak High, by the way. You know, he was amazing. And I think it's like, he's so underrated in it. Like, I think it's one of the best performances that I've seen on screen in Australia in years. You know, and again, but I think because it's a comedy, it's a bit like, you know, he's such a great clown and everything. So, but he just spoke that truth. Like, he just knew Cormac. And he had so much respect for him and everything that it just kind of came through. But that was a character that was like really crafted to make sure that he had his kind of own thing happening. But everything impacts the rest of the family. But we do live kind of like solo lives sometimes. But yeah, that was really important to me. I do think that we do need to see more, especially male characters in a positive light, because, you know, what happens? We've just got Andrew Tate fills that vacuum and his brothers every single time and that. And so you want to be giving audiences a different view and a different version of men on screen and that. And so that's something that I'm really big about as well, because I, in order to change the world, you've got to also kind of just kind of have a little bit of a play with how you'd like to see it.
Yeah, like, no, but what I really appreciated too, alongside all of that, is how he is a queer character, but he's a dad who just happens to be queer. It's not, he's a queer character who is also a dad, right? It's, and so it's just part of who he is. And that's a lot of the things of, you know, the organic presentation of different voices, diverse voices. You know, a lot of people aren't that. They are so much more than whatever it is, the label that they need to be put on.
That's it. It's not, you don't leverage that. It's even with like Nora's character. That character always had a disability. You know, some people were like, oh, it's just like a new thing. And I was like, no, like it was like always, like she's always like, no, for a very, very, very long time. And then, you know, she had CP and that, and we didn't know like how, I was always just like, well, when we find the right actor, this, we will adapt the story accordingly. Like that was the thing, you know. And, but it was a no-brainer for me, because I loved being able to flip that idea of like, you know, the common kind of trope. And I think it's true in some cases for a lot of reasons, but that thing of like the disabled child taking up all the space. And I wanted to flip that, you know, and that was so that really we could see how much space Audrey does take up in a place where she really shouldn't take up that much. How has this great imbalance happened? But then we've got this kind of like feisty character. But then, you know, Hannah was like, well, obviously I'm in a chair. I can't be, Nora used to be an MMA fighter. And so she was like, we'll need another sport. And I think she came back to me with tennis and I was like, no, fencing. And she was like, what? And I was like, because she's violent. Yeah. You're not getting tennis. Also, I want to see something that I don't see. But like, I wasn't stupid. I went and did my research. I spoke to people, you know, and did all that, and then came back to her and was like, hey, what do you think? You know, she sent me a lot of videos of her training in the fencing, but just being like really annoyed. Like, this is my annoyed face. And I was like, you're still doing it. Look at that. Look at you fencing. Great. Look, you know, because I was just, but that I'd always written her as having a disability and that, and not in any sort of like, the story's not about that so much. You know, like it's calls to it, but only like very everyday kind of comments. But yeah, everyone was presented as they were. I do think that we have an onus to have different bodies and different people on screen. That, like, I just think, why not? It doesn't make any sense to me that we're not doing it and that it's still a discussion. Like, that's what gets me. Like, even like when we got the, you know, doing the reframe for Melbourne Women's Film Festival and everything like that, like it's, so wonderful to get that recognition. It's so wonderful to get that accreditation. All those things are great. But at the same time, like, I've been around long enough to be like, oh my God, are we still doing, this is still a thing, you know? And like, you saw it with like the marches where women are just like, are we still doing this? Like, why is this still a thing? Like, you know, you do get a point of like frustration, which I just think it should be everywhere. I don't, you know, I don't understand it. Maybe I'm naive, but I just feel like the worlds that I populate and the worlds that I write, I always like to see different sort of people there. And, you know, they're actors, acting. Like, it's kind of like, you know, they can play the baddie, they can play whatever, you know, it doesn't matter. They can play the love interest.
Exactly. And I mean, gives like, Hannah's great, you know, regardless of the fact that...
Yeah. Yes, totally. Yeah. Like, it just wasn't, it's not as naive as to be like, you know, there's people that are like, I don't see color. Like, you should, if you don't see it, then it's something wrong, right? The world is different. Like, she can't get through the bathroom door. You know, you have to pull her up and down the stairs and stuff like that. Like, it's, you know, she operates in the world very differently to how we operate. And she sees the world differently to how we see it and stuff like that. So I never, ever want to assume I'll just write the character kind of as is. And I never kind of add, I don't want to bring like what I believe is like their story into it. Cause I'm just like, they're here to act. You know, they love to do, they want to do the character because of that. You know, I don't think I need to, I don't think that every decision has to be justified that way. You know, but yeah, like, we were just excited that the family had brown hair. And then I'm like, would this be the first Australian film where everyone's got like brown, like, you know, like, it was like stuff like that, where, whereas in my household I've got these blondes and, you know, everything in that. But yeah, I don't know, I just, I write the world that I see and I sprinkle it with the world that I want to see as well. But yeah, it's a kind of a mix between the two, I think. But yeah, no, I thought they were all brilliant. Like, those actors were so great. They're a gift to a writer.
Thanks for listening to this chat with Lou Sands about her film Audrey, which screens at the Melbourne Women in Film Festival on 21st of March 2025. The link is in the show notes for tickets. And if you want to check out other interviews, visit thecurb.com.au. I'll see you in the next one.